KPPPLP, Fargo Moorhead, 88.1 FM. You are watching or listening to Finding Me. All right, on to part two of one of two. Anyway, so Catra next discovers that Adora got her promotion, and she gets angry that she will not be coming along because Shadow Weaver deemed her unfit for the role. And I noted that there was some self-rejection considering her actual position and the single interaction she's had that we've witnessed with Shadow Weaver thus far in regards to her power. So right away, Catra snatches her Force Captain badge, runs off with it, and kind of throws a tantrum about it. And in any case, Catra doesn't even want to be the Force Captain, or so she states, and simply wants to continue to be close to Adora as a friend, having been raised with her like a sister. I wrote some notes on this too, from what I like and don't like about this relationship, and had a say about the general things that happened in this relationship up to the point where they go to the Whispering Woods. So, they've been close buddies for a while, giving each other crap, even in training, and for some friendships, that's okay. But to a degree that they hang out with each other, I wouldn't like Catra as a friend if I were Adora, and I would prefer Adora over Catra as a friend because she took her training seriously to get the rank that she did. Maybe I also don't appreciate the way Catra roughly treats Adora with snatching her things, like the badge I earlier mentioned, sabotaging her in some way, pulling on her hair, etc. But that's me. I don't like to be treated roughly by my friends or by my possible significant others, for that matter. So, as they make way to the Whispering Woods on a borrowed skiff, Catra continues to show her immaturity by hijacking the controls and leaving the consequences for a later time to deal with. So, due to Catra nearly running themselves into a tree, Adora falls off the skiff, and we have the first look of the Sword of Power, which quickly disappears from Adora's sight once she reawakens with Catra, waking her up to return back to the Fright Zone before anyone notices their absence. We cut back to Glimmer, who is writing a letter to her mother to voice her thoughts and concerns, which are valid. She starts out by saying she feels like her mother doesn't respect her, and her friend Bo comes in to console her about the siege at Elberon, where she was sent and, as I early on predicted, was in fact a remote outpost that had the least likely chance of being attacked, and Angela had zero expectations for Glimmer to actually defend it. After fighting with her mom once more, she agrees to go out with Bo to investigate the powerful detection of First One's tech in the Whispering Woods in order to prove to her mother that she is capable of taking on that task, despite how dangerous it may be. Adora proceeds to hear a voice in her head or dreams calling out to her. She tries to sneak out when Catra catches her leaving, and then Catra to stay behind, since Catra gets in enough trouble as it is. We don't need that on Adora. So Glimmer, Bo, and Adora run into each other as they both find the sword and begin to fight for it, something valuable to their causes. Adora then forms her connection to the sword and gets a better look at the entity Light Hope, asking her to answer the call of Etheria and fight for the honor of Grayskull. So after she reawakens again from the light of a second time, Adora awakens captured by Glimmer and Bo, and during this time, Glimmer leads their way back to Bright Moon, while Bo starts to get to know Adora. So this interaction is important for later episodes and seasons, considering how Bo is very polite and kind to Adora, despite her enemy captor in this situation, and how we'll reflect on this behavior when the roles are switched, when he's the enemy's hostage in the Fright Zone with a Horde soldier. So hold that thought. Adora tells Bo what she's been told at the Fright Zone. Princes are a dangerous threat to everyone on Etheria, that they are violent instigators who don't know how to control their powers, and Hordak tells them that they are doing what's best for Etheria, better and more orderly. Adora witnesses the damage that the Horde soldiers have done to villages and the harmless communities in Bright Moon's territories. Glimmer tells Adora another story, that the Horde has poisoned their land, burned their cities, and destroyed everything in their path. The pottery shard lifted earlier forces the viewer to think of indigenous communities before colonizers came in and do the same thing. This imagery personally bothers me a lot and feels a little bit appropriative and maybe on the side of uncreative, unless that's what they're trying to do, which is to call back to that imagery. Either way, it bothers me. And I wish they had, done literally anything else to convey that these communities were harmless or that their people are being harmed in some way by the Horde. Because there's plenty of ways that could be illustrated. But this felt like, I don't want to say over the top, but it was just not working for me. Earlier in their walk, I noticed that Bo deliberately makes sure that Adora doesn't trip over the high root in their path, whereas one might expect this to be allowed to happen when a captive trips over before forcing them along. Then my second to last point is that the group is then attacked by a large insect-like creature, and Adora escapes, managing to pick up the sword, unlocking her power as She-Ra. And that's how the first episode ends. I personally felt like it was a bit much having to touch on the sword three times, and twice would have been fine, but I guess Adora is just not that bright of a character, even though she's supposed to be the best Horde soldier. Anyway, perhaps for the sake of screen time and the character development, it was this pacing that felt weird for me, and to give it a fair shot to get the setup I needed, I will continue talking about what I think about this in episode 2, The Sword, part 2.
Did you find yourself today while finding me? Feel free to send me a message. You can contact us at 701-566-0917, at Nemo Potatoes on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. Contact me through my contact on kpppfm.com/finding-me on that tab, or email me at nemo@kpppfm.com. If you'd like a sneak peek to the Building of Finding Me programs in the future, consider becoming a patron at my Patreon at patreon.com/anemonefish. Follow us on Facebook at 88.1 FM Fargo Moorhead, the People's Press Project, and Mexi-Can. Donations to Fargo Moorhead's newest low-power commercial-free radio station can be made at our website on kpppfm.com/donate, and check out our underwriting opportunities at kpppfm.com/underwriting-opportunities on how you can support the first queer radio program in the Red River Valley. Thanks for tuning in. See you next month on the first Wednesday here on Finding Me.